Bill Buckley with you until 2 Sport thereafter, and it's gadget time. Yes, the gadget detective, Fevzi Türkalp, is here with another recommendation for a bit of kit, and also keeping us up to date on all the news from the tech world. Don't forget, you can subscribe to his podcasts for free at his website, gadgetdetective.com, and on Alexa, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, etc. Hi, Fevzi.
Hello.
Lovely to have you with us. And I wasn't expecting this one, actually. I thought it'd be something to do with the Ukraine. But no, it's back to the other story, as it were, COVID, and a COVID tracking app, which is going to lose its funding.
Yeah, but I will link this to the Ukraine well. As you will see in a moment, I see an overarching theme about governments and information. So this is about an app called Zoe, Z-O-E, which is a COVID tracking app that was created by King's College London and a technology company called Zoe. And it allows nearly 1 million people a day to input any symptoms that they might have. And it allows us to see who is ill, what types of symptoms arise out of different variants of COVID. Because you may have noticed that as we've gone through sort of Wuhan and Delta and Omicron BA2, that actually the symptoms has changed slightly, and we wouldn't necessarily know that without apps like this. And also it allows us to track people if they have any reactions to vaccines as well. So very, very important work. It's been partly funded by the UK government over the last 2 years, just over £5 million over 2 years, which obviously sounds like a lot of money, and it is if it was in the pockets of one person, but in terms of a budget, is very, very little, and certainly a fraction of the money that they wasted on their own app, which didn't really work for quite some time. And it's disappointing as well, because they claimed that only a few weeks ago they were told that they were virtually certain that their funding would continue, and then with just a few days' notice, they've pulled the plug on them. And this is a dangerous thing to do, particularly at a phase where we're trying to allow people, you know, to go back to some form of normality, that we need all the monitoring tools that we can get. And it just struck me that why would they do this? It's not for the money, you know, so it's not a lot of money in terms of the budget, you know. So it's almost, the cynical part of me thinks that, you know, there's several things going on, because if you notice the data that is published at the moment by the government has gone from daily to weekly. From the 1st of April, they're stopping free testing for people. So that will seriously affect the data, because if no one tests, no one will test positive. And it just...
Well, government isn't here to put its side, obviously. Maybe they will say it's all part of our softly approach to learning to live with the virus rather than trying to eradicate the virus.
Exactly what they're saying. But you know, and people will make up their own minds about that. But it just struck me, because I was looking at Russia and I was looking at the control of information there. And I know it's not the same, but controlling the flow of information to a population is a very powerful tool in terms of being able to mold the narrative and what people think about it. And I was just looking here that, you know, in the last week we've seen a sort of 56% increase in infections. We've seen rises in hospitalizations and deaths. And it seems like there's a perfect storm going on, and this isn't the right time to be cutting funding to applications. So it's sad. I hope that they'll change their mind. I rather suspect that they won't, but maybe they'll be able to find funding from somewhere else. But it's just, it's something that, you know, 1 million people a day engaged with in order to, you know, for the greater good, and they're effectively being told it's not value, and I find that sad.
So if the idea isn't to save money, because it's 5 million is a drop in the ocean, and again, I suppose I'm asking you to speculate and get terribly Machiavellian here, but why wouldn't they want us to know exactly where we are with it, do you suppose? I mean, it's not going to cause panic if numbers go up, is it? Because we've been there before. We've been in such a worse state than this before. So why bother to try, if you're right, why bother to try to manipulate the narrative in this way?
I think that the government has understandably decided that the country can't afford to do what we've been doing. And therefore, you know, it's sending people back to work. It's made some changes which I find bizarre, like telling people that when they test positive, they no longer have to isolate themselves, which is just, it's counterintuitive. It used to be 10 days isolation, then it was 7, then it was 5, then it was scrapped. I mean, this just, it just seems irresponsible to me in the wearing of masks.
Because if you had a really bad cold, you would stay at home so you don't infect your colleagues.
I think, you know, look, if you ask my opinion, it's basically this. There is a tacit decision in this. It is that a certain number of deaths is acceptable. And we don't really want to draw too much attention to what that number is, because it may be quite high. And it may be that the people who die are the most vulnerable in our society, and that doesn't sit well. And it may be just more comfortable all round, including for the government, that
people don't draw
too much attention to it.
People say, how dreadful, how wicked, every life is precious. But we're all like that. You know, we have long been used to over 1,000 people every year dying in road accidents. We haven't stopped driving because of that. We're very odd in the way that we are.
We are
cold statistic people as well as human beings with hearts. It's a strange thing, dichotomy.
I understand. Yeah, and I often think about that sort of we still drive argument. Well, I'd say it's a couple of things. You know, vehicles save a lot of lives as well. Not least ambulances and other sorts of vehicles, you know. But also, with road deaths, they've been going down year on year as we've been improving, you know, car safety and road safety and driving standards, theoretically. So that figure's coming down. It's not a figure that's going to suddenly escalate, and it's not one that we have to monitor. We do monitor, but it's not like, you know, we're going to get exponential rises in it because it's an infectious thing. You know, road accidents are not infectious.
One crash causes another 100. No, absolutely.
Yeah, whereas there's no real benefit to this. And see, the worry in all of this for me is that if we accept, even if we accept that level of death, and we write off those people who, you know, paid their taxes and are now no longer, in some people's eyes, useful members of society and therefore expendable. Even if we accept all that, what we're accepting is a very, very high level of infections every day, about 60,000 a day currently. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1 in 25 people in this country, by Office for National Statistics this week, has said that they believe 1 in 25 people is currently COVID positive in this country.
Mm.
And much higher in some cities, for example. So we accept that. But the problem is, if you accept that high rate of infections, even in this country, 60,000 a day, and that's probably a gross underestimate of the true figure, because that's just the people who are getting tested, then you are silly if you don't expect there to be more variants coming down the line, because every single infection is an incubator for variants.
Yeah.
And we're taking out our tracking of what's going on. Yeah. Our early warning systems are being taken out by things like this app. So it just seems to me dangerous.
You make a good case. I've done my best to, you know, provide the opposite view, but it's yeah, hard,
I'm,
it's
I mean,
hard to
I'm,
do
and
that.
I'm trying to be through. Fair and balanced in this, but I'm actually very angry about it. Because,
I can kind of tell.
Like so many people, you know, I have vulnerable people in my family.
Yes.
And, it actually hurts me to see that. You know, we close our eyes, and this sort of closing off of data allows us to look the other way as a population, and it's sad.
Well, I think we need cheering up with a nice travel mug. So we'll have one in a minute. It's Fevzi Turkout, the gadget detective. On to gadget of the week, then. And what we've learned about you in the last few weeks is that you're a man who is obsessed with hot drinks. Because it's another
mug. But not too hot.
But not exactly. Not hot. Exactly the same temperature all the time. We've mastered this at home. Now we're going to master it on the move, basically.
Yeah, so you'll remember we did a temperature-controlled coffee mug for home use the other day from a company called Ember, E-M-B-E-R. And this is their travel mug, so it's called the new Ember Travel Mug 2. Too, because it's, you know, the new version, and it looks like a lot of other travel mugs in that it's kind of tall. It's I don't know, about 7.5 inches tall, something like that. So you know, fairly tall, about just over 3 inches wide. You can, nothing to stop you using this at home, actually, and a lot of people who have this actually do use them at home, especially if they don't go out as much as they used to. But it's a temperature controlled mug, and what this means is it's different from normal travel mugs. Are basically thermos flasks, that they have sort of a layer of air in between that stops a drink from either cooling down.
Opposite of the fridge, really, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they just use insulation, but this is different. So the problem with a travel mug, from my perspective, is, I mean, they're great because they can keep a drink hot for many, many, many hours. Mm-hmm. Some of them claim sort of 12, 24 hours on them. I've got one that claims 24, but I've never been out for 24 hours at a time, so I've no idea. But the problem with that is if you put a hot drink in there, you know, you boil it and you put it in, you put it in nice and hot because you want it to be hot, it's going to stay at sort of a too hot a temperature for quite a long time. And then what you end up doing is you have to pour it into a cup, you know, and then wait for it to cool down, and you burn yourself a bit. And then you think, is it cool enough now? And then you burn yourself a bit more before you eventually get to the point where, you know, you can drink it having really scalded the inside of your mouth and lips. So this is different. This uses a heating element, a battery and a heating element built into the base. If you look, I've sent you a diagram of it in cross section. And if you actually see, if you look at the cross section of it, you can see that the bottom inch or so is not for the fluid. It is where the battery and the heating element sit. You don't see it from the outside, but it's encased in there. So what happens is you set what temperature you want it to be, and that can be, you know, your drink ideal drinking temperature. And then it's not a heavily insulated mug. It allows the temperature to cool right down quite quickly till it reaches the optimal temperature. Then when it reaches your optimal temperature, the one that you've set, either using the app or directly on the machine itself, we'll talk about that in a minute, it then maintains that temperature for about 3 hours, which is, you know, obviously is not that 12 or 24 hours. But the difference is it's at that temperature all the time. Now, you combine that with the clever lid. The lid is very clever. It's got a sort of a little circular disc in the middle that you just press down. Or what they used to call, I don't know, pop-o-matic or something. You press it down, and it's a non-spill opening in the lid, and you can actually sip it directly from the mug if you wish, or you can pour it into a cup if you prefer. But the point is, you don't have to wait for it to cool down, and every sip will be the same temperature. And that is really nice.
Yes. It's an improvement, that's for sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's very different to this thing of let's keep it at nearly 100 degrees for the first 2 hours so you can't drink it when you want to. Yeah. And then you know, it then descends the temperature. It doesn't. This one descends quickly, stays at the temperature you want for about 3 hours, and then goes cold.
And people are much more likely to be out for 3 hours than 24 hours anyway, aren't they? So that's all good.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I mean, I know my life isn't all that, but, you know, frankly, 3 hours is more than enough for most people. Exactly. So that's all good. The bad news with this, as we've discussed before, is the price. It's a 5 pence short of £180. Now, when you compare that to, you know, a thermos travel mug, you know, it's about £160 more expensive. So, you know, so it's a big difference. So it's obviously a luxury item. It does have that, you know, great advantage to it. You can also use it at home. It's the charger is a coaster that plugs into the mains. So you just pop it on the coaster on your desk or table or wherever you are, and it will keep it warm for many hours, because once it's on the coaster, you're not relying upon the capacity of the battery. Right. It will keep the battery charged up, and it will stay hot all day long. And it's non-spill, unlike the indoor mug, because unless you press down the I like to call it pop-o-matic. That was a game, wasn't it?
It was frustration.
With the dice.
Pop-o-matic dice in the middle of the board, and then you move little wooden counters around.
Obviously neither of us are old enough to remember that. But
no, my grandma told me about it. It sounded good. Yeah,
your grandma told me about it as well, but still. Okay, and it's IPX7. It's fully submersible up to a metre in water. It's leak-proof. The lid is dishwasher safe, but the mug itself is hand wash. And because it's got electronics in it, you must not microwave it. It's got metal inside and batteries and things like that. So look, I think I spoke to you about this before. And look, it's not that I think that everyone's got £180 to blow on a coffee mug, travel or otherwise. It is just that it surprisingly enhances what the quality of one's life, and in a very first world way. I know that, and I know that, you know, it might be better for us to, you know, forego this and spend, you know, donate the money to charity or something.
Yeah,
you know, I quite get that, but
But we all have different values of what we spend money. I mean, my parents never changed the curtains when we moved house for about 10 years, even though they were about 6 inches too short for the new windows, but would happily spend £100 at the garden centre. You know, we've all got this weird sort of pop charts, haven't we, of spending. So, no, I'm sure people will. Also, very naughty, expensive, extravagant things are jolly useful gifts, aren't they? You don't buy them for yourself. You buy them for somebody that you love who would think that way. Oh, well, I'd love it, but I can't have it. Well, they can have it because you need something to give them. So,
I agree. I've been experimenting with this sort of... I've read books on minimalism in the past, which is a strange thing for someone with gadgets to do. Well, you know, so one form of minimalism is that, you know, you own six shirts and that's it, right? The other one is that says that you get rid of the 50 things that you've got that are, you know, let's say they're gadgets. You've got 50 gadgets that you don't use that often. Yeah. You sell them and you buy three really good ones that will you'll use and enjoy. You don't have to give them as much space. You don't have to maintain them.
And so much easier to do these days with new technology, by buying and selling like it never was before.
So in that way, you can have just a few treasured things that improve the quality of your life. I've forgotten the lady's name. Is it Kondo? Whatever. I can't remember her name
now. Condoleezza Rice?
No. I've forgotten her name. Japanese woman.
Connie Francis?
So, but her idea is, you know, when you're decluttering, you know, keep the things that give you that give you joy.
Which will
bring you joy, which will be my excuse to HMRC when I explain why I haven't kept 6 years' worth of tax records. But I would just explain to them they didn't give me joy, so I didn't keep them. But but this can be one of those items if, you know, drinking, you know, hot drinks is important to you. If it's the sort of thing that, you know, helps you in the morning, helps you get through the day, then, you know, there's an argument for it. All in, I've given it 3 stars out of 5. If it were cheaper, it would have got more because it's a very good gadget. But even 3 out of 5, 60%, it's not bad.
I think you're right to hammer it a little bit in that way, but otherwise, terrific. That has been a great pleasure as ever, and I never dreamt that we'd get onto philosophy. It just shows what a wonderful thing conversation can be. We shall talk in 7 days' time. There he goes, the gadget detective, Fevzi Turkalp.